The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I'm your co-host today, your guest host today, Linda House. I'm the Executive Vice President of External Affairs here at the Cancer Support Community, and I am filling in for your regular host, Kim Tibaldo, the President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community, who will be joining you again next week. The Wellness Community and Gilda's Club have become united, and we are now the Cancer Support Community, one of the largest providers of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are offered at over 170 locations worldwide, also online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org and by a telephone helpline, and that number is 888-793-9355. Being empowered is choosing to adopt actions, behaviors, and attitudes that can help you regain a sense of control over your treatment and life with cancer. This is a quote directly from, Frankly Speaking About Cancer, lung cancer. Part of being empowered when you're faced with a diagnosis is learning all you can about your specific type of cancer, what it is, how it affects your body, how it's treated, and what you can expect during diagnosis, treatment, and beyond. Today, we're going to learn how to be empowered to face a lung cancer diagnosis. According to the American Lung Association, there are approximately 224,000 new cases of lung cancer, and that's just the expectation for this year alone. And this represents about 13% of all cancer diagnoses. And lung cancer is also the most common cancer worldwide. Today's show is brought to you by Boehringer Ingelheim. We're going to take a closer look at lung cancer. We've had a couple shows on lung cancer this year, but we really feel like there's so much valuable information. We'd like to take this time and really dig deep into lung cancer, from what it is to how it's diagnosed to treatment to how to find support. And specifically, let's get into some of the newer discussion around lung cancer. How do we make sure that it's accurately diagnosed? So joining us today to talk about lung cancer is a longtime friend of mine and just a brilliant cancer advocate, Maureen Rigney, the Director of Community and Support Services for the Lung Cancer Alliance, where Maureen oversees support and outreach services. Maureen, I know that you are a licensed clinical social worker, and you have been with the Lung Cancer Alliance since 2005. So thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Linda. I'm really pleased to be here.
So let's just start at the beginning. And for our listeners who may have missed one of our earlier lung cancer shows, just tell us, what is lung cancer?
Well, sure. First we'll start with cancer, which develops as cells grow out of control and form growths or tumors. And without treatment, cancer just continues to spread. That's also called metastasis, from where it started to other parts of the body. And so lung cancer is just cancer that starts in the lungs. And things like tobacco smoke, asbestos fibers, air pollution, and those kinds of things can damage the cells of the lung, and then cancer can develop.
And so there is a difference between a primary diagnosis of lung cancer and a metastatic lung cancer. And can you just spend some time really helping our listeners understand the difference between the two of those and how it would really impact them, why it's so important to make that differentiation?
Yeah, that's a great question, Linda, because it can be hard for folks to understand. There is definitely a difference. And so lung cancer starts in the lungs and can spread to, say, the liver or the brain. But it's still lung cancer. And it's the same as when breast or another cancer spreads to the lungs. And it's really important to know where in the body the cancer started, because the different kinds of cancer can be treated in very different ways.
And I think it's important for us to say that typically if you have a metastatic cancer to the lung, then the disease is treated like the primary source. So if it's
exactly.
a breast cancer that metastasizes to the lung, your doctors are really going to want to treat that as a breast cancer, not necessarily a lung cancer.
Absolutely.
Yep. So walk us through, we hear terms, non-small cell, small cell. Explain the difference between the two of those.
Sure. The difference has to do with a few things. It has to do with how the cell becomes cancer. The different types also look different under the microscope, and they act differently. So something like small cell lung cancer spreads more quickly than other types of lung cancer. And, of course, the different types of lung cancer also respond to different types of treatment. So it's important to know what kind of lung cancer you have so that then you'll understand why the treatment that you're getting is recommended. Non-small cell is more common than small cell, and there are different subtypes. Adenocarcinoma, squamous cell, and large cell are the three most often diagnosed types of non-small cell lung cancer.
And you know, when people think about, you know, do I have non-small cell or small cell, those are treated differently, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so it's important to really have that conversation with your healthcare professional ahead of time.
Yes.
Prior to your treatment. And does that impact clinical trials? So if somebody would be interested in participating in a clinical trial, would they need to know their type of lung cancer?
Absolutely. As well as the stage, which just means how far the cancer has spread from the place that it started. So yes, it's extremely important to understand the type of lung cancer and the stage, because either for, you know, the traditional treatment or a clinical trial, those are the most important things. Other treatment options are determined by, you know, a person's overall health and their goals for treatment and other things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I'm a patient and I hear the words you have lung cancer, it's important not to stop there. And I always say, please don't go search the internet at that stage, because you really need to have a lot more information about your cancer to really start to put that picture together. And that's something that may be formed over a period of a few weeks, a month. What is that time frame?
Absolutely. And that's great advice to not look on the internet certainly right away, and some people choose not to at all. Yes, because you can be diagnosed with lung cancer and you still need tests, a lot of other tests, which I think, you know, we can talk about later, but a lot of other tests to really determine what the stage is. And it's really important for the treatment team to have the full picture. And so sometimes it can feel to folks like it's taking forever to get diagnosed with all of these tests, and they're anxious and they want to get into treatment. But it's really important to have for the doctor to know everything they can about the cancer before they start the treatment.
Okay. So tell me about what is new. I don't know. I don't think that mutations are new, but our learning about mutations are new. So we're hearing a lot about mutations in lung cancer and diagnostic tests, you know, specific to those mutations and treatments that are specific to those mutations. So can you kind of walk through, A, what are mutations, and how do those play a role in your lung cancer diagnosis and treatment?
Sure. So it gets a little complicated, but it's important to start kind of with basic biology when we talk about mutations and alterations and those kinds of things. And so it's important to remember that the cells in our body have several parts. There's the nucleus or the nerve center, and that contains the pairs of chromosomes, and they carry genetic material like DNA and RNA. And then within the DNA are genes, and those genes contain the information that we inherited from each of our parents. parents. Over time, those genes can change, and so they can mutate, they can alter, they can fuse. They call these things, they can be many different ways that the cells change, but these mutations can happen over many generations, or they can happen in a single lifetime in response to things that maybe we eat or drink or are exposed to. And some of those gene changes are helpful. Some don't make one difference or make any difference one way or the other. But other changes in the genes can lead to the development, growth, and then the spread of cancer. And we're learning so much more about the different types of changes that cause lung cancer to grow and spread. And the two types that people may be most familiar with, because we have drug therapies to treat them, are the epidermal growth factor receptor, EGFR mutation, and anaplastic lymphoma kinase, or the ELK gene fusion. But researchers have discovered many other types of changes in lung cancer, and that affects how it grows and responds to treatment, and are working to address them as well. So then, in companion to identifying these types of mutations and fusions that cause the cancer to grow, then therapies are treated to really shut down these processes, and so to try to stop the cancer from growing any further.
Mm-hmm. And so, at what point in the process would a patient know if they have a mutation or not?
The recommendation right now is that people who are diagnosed with adenocarcinoma, when they have a biopsy, their cancer should be tested. Other types of cancer are also tested within specific clinical trials to identify any kind of gene mutations or alterations. However, we know that over time cancer can change, and so there are definitely people who may have been on therapies for a while, especially with advanced cancer, and maybe re-biopsy to find out if either those mutations exist if they weren't tested for in the beginning, or if the cancer has changed and mutated during the course of treatment, because that can happen as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. I just want to summarize before we go to a commercial break what we've talked about just in this particular segment. We've raised the issue around lung cancer. We talked about the difference between a primary and a secondary or a metastatic lung cancer. We have talked about the important difference between knowing whether you have a small cell or a non-small cell type of lung cancer. And then you have really done a nice job of explaining the different mutations that exist in types of lung cancer. So I know in the next segment, we're going to talk a little bit more about how lung cancer is diagnosed and what tests are available for them. So I want to make sure that our listeners stay tuned after this commercial break, when we will get into this in even more detail. So this is Frankly Speaking About Cancer, and we'll be right back with more after this break.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Cancer, it's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Azi, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I am your guest host today, Linda House, and we are so lucky to have with us Maureen Rigney, who is the Director of Community and Support Services for the Lung Cancer Alliance. And in our first segment, we talked about lung cancer, what it is, the different types, you know, molecular information that you should know. And I really, Maureen, would like to step back. Now that we know what we should know, let's talk about how do we secure that information. And I know that one of the big things that Lung Cancer Alliance has really been able to bring to patients with lung cancer and patients pre-lung cancer is screening. And, you know, screening for lung cancer is very important as early detection is really a key to survival in this type of cancer. So could you just tell us what is screening? And what is the current status of screening?
Sure. The topic of screening is really an exciting one because it's through screening for lung cancer that we can save thousands of lives, probably tens of thousands of lives. So in 2010, the results of something called the National Lung Screening Trial, or the NLST, were released by the National Cancer Institute. And that study compared the use of low-dose viral CT scans, computed tomography scans, against chest x-rays to see which would be better at finding lung cancer early. And the study included people who were either current smokers or those who had quit but had a history of heavy smoking. And so that study showed that the death rate for those screened with the CT scans was 20% better than those who had the x-ray. And so what that means is that CT screening for lung cancer in this specific way saved lives. And now, since those results were published, major medical organizations have recommended that those at high risk be screened for lung cancer. More insurance companies are covering those screenings. And next year in 2015, we're thrilled that Medicare will also cover CT screening for those at high risk. And the CT scans, these low-dose viral CT scans, are really the only screening for lung cancer that's been found to lower the chance of dying from the disease. But there is really a lot of exciting research into other types of screening, including blood tests and sputum tests. So we are, you know, hoping in the future the chest x-ray will be more of a follow-up, the chest CT scan will be more of a follow-up test after we've identified people who may be at risk through blood or sputum tests.
Mm-hmm. And so can you say a little bit more about the blood and the sputum tests? And are those available now or are they under clinical trial?
They're under clinical trial. There are some tests that can confirm the presence of cancer, but what we're really looking at, and again, it is very promising, are tests that can identify with pretty good specificity if a person has a high indication of a possible lung cancer and then should be screened after that. And my understanding is that some of those tests may actually be approved within the next year.
When you talk about a blood test is a typical blood test like you and I are used to having when we have our annual physical.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, great. And then so from a sputum perspective, you know, just to kind of clarify that for our listeners, this is where if someone is having a productive cough, they could actually cough into a container and they can test the elements of that, you know, that sputum and see if there are any cancer cells in there. And so that's a really interesting non-invasive way to make a diagnosis as well.
Absolutely. Or at least start that process for sure.
Yeah, sure. And it's great really because it's, so many times it's hard to get that diagnosis if you have to do a biopsy or something. And so this is a much lower risk for the patients.
It sure is.
So can we talk into a little bit more about lung cancer diagnosis? So, you know, let's say you have your screening and there is, or whether it's a sputum test or a blood test or your X-ray or your spiral CT, and there's something suspicious on the results. So what would be next for the patient? What other ways are cancers diagnosed?
Well, as far as when a nodule is found, it really depends on what it looks like. The next steps would be dependent on what it looks like. The fact is that most of us over the age of 50 have nodules in our lungs from various exposures and, you know, the pneumonia, bronchitis in the past, those kinds of things. So having a nodule isn't unusual, but they can tell a lot, even just from the CT scan, about the nodule by the edges and what it's made up of, what it's composed of, and the size. And so the next steps are determined really by what it looks like and how big it is. So for a very small nodule, a person may come back in a year. For something that looks a little bit more suspicious, if it's the composition isn't right or that some of the edges look iffy, they might have the person come back within a few months. And so the real issue is really trying to determine with nodules which are just going to, you know, stay and not change and grow, or which are going to change and grow and become cancer. So that's why that follow-up is so important when something's found on a CT scan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And who typically orders these tests? Are they the general practitioner? Are patients automatically referred to a medical oncologist?
No, because they will not have been diagnosed with cancer. So the typically what happens is the general practitioner will order the test, and the results will be sent back to the general practitioner, and you know, oftentimes the screening center will follow up with the patient. But so it can be either the general practitioner's responsibility, but usually the screening centers also help to remind people to come back as well. Mm-hmm. And some cancer centers actually have nodule management programs where if something's found, a person actually goes into a specific system that is solely designed to follow them along this process to make sure that they are watching that nodule and can tell if something suspicious happens to it.
Okay. And so, we hear a lot about patient navigators in hospital systems. And I'm just trying to think about as we're really in this show in particular, trying to encourage patients how to become empowered participants in their care. So the general practitioner, you know, may be ordering these tests and having these conversations with patients. Is this a time when a lung cancer navigator might be of help, and you know, what are those, and how would patients request access to one of those?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. A patient navigator is someone. It can be a social worker. Sometimes it's a nurse. Sometimes it's another healthcare professional. Sometimes it's a layperson. We certainly know people with lung cancer who have gone through training and are navigators themselves. And they're really there to help the patient through the course of the journey with cancer. So they start out and help them understand the cancer, help them access the resources. Oftentimes they will help them coordinate their appointments. So they really are valuable. And the interesting thing is that what we're finding as more and more screening centers open at cancer centers, that sometimes it's the lung cancer navigator who is managing that center, that is an integral part of it, and so then can follow that patient through the process. For people who, the issue with having a nodule is that you haven't been diagnosed with cancer yet, so you can't really access cancer services because you may not have cancer and you may never develop cancer. But certainly many of the screening programs have navigators themselves to help people through that part of the process.
Okay. So it's just getting in touch with your hospital system or your physician's office or community-based center, like the Cancer Support Community or some of the other community centers, to see if there are navigators available for them.
Absolutely.
It sure seems like this would be a perfect time to have somebody to help you walk through all of these things.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep. Before we go to our next break, you know, we started talking a little bit about genetic mutations, but talk to us about personalized medicine. When I think about genetic mutations, I think about personalized medicine. So what is personalized medicine?
Sure. Increasingly, we are talking about medicine becoming more personalized, and that has to do with really understanding these genetic mutations and changes that we've been talking about, and then adapting the person's treatment accordingly. Cancer treatment is becoming increasingly personalized, and that really means that the treatment for the person is guided by understanding those gene changes, the alterations and mutations and the like that we've been talking about. And it's through understanding those changes in the cells that are making the cancer grow and spread that the more personalized treatments can be given. So in, for instance, the EGFR mutation, there's a drug called Tarceva that may be prescribed for that, that's designed specifically to target that mutation and shut down the way that is making the cancer grow and spread.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. And when we come back, we are going to cover a lot more on this particular topic, and in particular, some of the treatments for lung cancer. So please stay tuned right after this break. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're talking about lung cancer with Maureen Rigney from the Lung Cancer Alliance. This episode is sponsored by Boehringer Ingelheim, and we'll be right back after this break.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around two pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive one delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliamealsathome.com. Or call 617-733-5848.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355. Or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit MealTrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB. Or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I am your guest host today, Linda House, and I am joined by Maureen Rigney, who is the Director of Community and Support Services for the Lung Cancer Alliance. And welcome back to the show. We've had such a great conversation about lung cancer, what it is, how it's screened. We want to move on to treatment, but before we get to treatment, Maureen, I'm just wondering if you could spend a little bit of time just explaining a little bit more about screening. So who should be screened? When should they be screened or how frequently? And where would someone go to inquire about screening?
Sure. I think the important thing to remember is that screening for any disease is done in people who don't have symptoms of the disease. So, for instance, if someone has symptoms of lung cancer, they really shouldn't be screened but should talk with their doctor to see if they need diagnostic tests. The guidelines for screening vary a bit, but overall, people who are between the ages of 55 and 80, who either currently smoke or quit less than 15 years ago and had what they call a 30-pack year history of smoking are eligible to be screened. And a 30-pack year history simply means that you smoked a pack of cigarettes a day for 30 years or two packs a day for 15 years or three packs a day for 10 years or the equivalent. Mm-hmm. And recommendations vary on how often a person will need to be screened. As I said before, if a small nodule is found, the person may be asked to come back in less than a year to check on it. Some people will be screened yearly for a time, and that will be it. Others may be screened yearly for the rest of their lives. It really depends on them and their risk factors and their treatment team's decision. It's very important to go to a screening center where the radiologists have a good understanding of reading lung cancer low-dose CT scans. Right now, we have our screening centers of excellence, so Lung Cancer Alliance is an excellent resource to find a place that does quality screening in your area. We list those on our website, and we can also talk with folks about them on our helpline, which is 800-298-2436.
Well, and I've seen a number of advertisements for lung cancer screening. So are those, should our listeners, do a little extra due diligence when they see those advertisements and, reach out to see if they're listed on your website, or should they feel confident in moving forward?
Absolutely. Due diligence is definitely needed. There are a lot of really great quality screening centers that are actually screening for free and for very low cost. However, there are also, centers where you can go and get your whole body scanned, and they may not be focusing on the chest and not have the right equipment and readers for those scans. So it is very important to look for centers who who explain and will sit down and talk with the person being screened about the risks and benefits associated with screening so that the person understands that. They have competent radiologists. And we also encourage the screening centers that we recognize to have smoking cessation programs. We know that there are still a lot of people smoking out there, and it can be very difficult to quit. And so having that available, we know from the research that being screened for lung cancer is kind of a teachable moment. And so some people find it easier to quit as they're being screened.
Okay, great. Thank you for that clarification. And let's move on to treating lung cancer. So can you start by explaining the difference in treatments? And, sometimes we hear the term local treatment. Sometimes we hear the term systemic treatment. What does that really mean to patients?
Sure. Local treatments are used when the lung cancer is small and more contained, and that would include surgery, radiation, including some really targeted types of radiation. And systemic treatments go throughout the body. So the one systemic treatment that most people are familiar with is chemotherapy, and that's usually a liquid given through a vein with a goal of killing the cancer cells in the body, which are very fast-growing. Targeted therapies that are used to specifically target those gene therapies we've talked about are also systemic, and in lung cancer, most of those come in pill form.
Okay, great. Thank you. And so talk about the other types of treatment then for lung cancer.
Sure. Well, surgery is the preferred treatment for smaller and contained lung cancers, and the surgery to remove lung cancer can really range from removing a small wedge of the lung to taking out an entire lung. And there have really been some great advances in lung cancer surgery in the way of minimally invasive surgeries over the last few years. And those less invasive ways are techniques that usually require shorter hospital stays, typically have fewer complications and shorter recovery times. And they also leave much smaller scars, which patients really appreciate. Chemotherapy is still a mainstay of lung cancer treatment when the cancer is spread or metastasized. As I mentioned, the goal of chemo is to kill the fast-growing cancer cells. The schedule for that depends on the type of lung cancer and the drugs used, but it typically a person goes in for that treatment once every 3 weeks. And while some advances have been made in chemotherapy to treat lung cancer, many advances have been made in the management of side effects from that chemotherapy. Another option for some folks are those targeted therapies that we were talking about. Those are generally given to people whose cancer has those specific mutations or changes we've been talking about. And there are an increasing number of targeted therapies being used to treat specifically non-small cell lung cancer, and many more are being studied. Some types of targeted therapies in lung cancer are in pill form. Others are given through a vein and may be given with or without chemotherapy. And one of the problems with targeted therapies is that they always stop working. That may be much, you know, sooner for some folks, much longer for others. Some people are on targeted therapies for many years. But the good news is that researchers are actively working on drugs to overcome that resistance, as they call it, to those initial therapies. Radiation is another treatment, and that uses high-energy X-rays to shrink the tumors and decrease symptoms. There are a lot of different types of radiation, and the type a person gets will depend on many factors. But an exciting advancement in radiation is called stereotactic body radiotherapy, or SBRT, and that's a very precise form of radiation, and it's used to target the tumor, and it spares nearby healthy tissues, and it's used to treat smaller and contained lung cancer. And finally, not approved yet, but showing a lot of promise is immunotherapy. And it's a really exciting approach to treating lung cancer. And so as we know, the body's immune system fights off infection and other foreign invaders that can make us sick. And the immune system doesn't work against cancer for many reasons. It may not see the cancer as a foreign invader. It may not be strong enough to protect the body from the cancer. Or the cancer can actually fool the immune system so it can't work against it properly. And so some very promising research is underway to understand how the immune system is affected by the cancer and then how it can be activated to fight against it.
Mm-hmm. Great. So let's talk a little bit about a couple things that you mentioned. I just wanted to dig a little bit deeper into. So sure. Side effect management, and all of the treatments have some level of side effects. And you know, I like to point out to patients that that this isn't the type of treatment that a relative may have gone through 20 or 30 years ago. That we do have tools that will help manage both the physical and the emotional side effects that would occur with the treatment of lung cancer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, side effects differ according to the kind of treatment given, and they can range from, you know, pain after surgery to hair loss from chemotherapy to rash from targeted therapies. Mm-hmm. I would say the most universal side effect that I hear about from all of those types of therapy is really fatigue. And the two most important things to remember about side effects is, one, that everybody's different, and everybody will respond to a therapy in their individual way. We've known people who've had a really hard time with chemotherapy, also folks who have worked all the way through their treatment of chemotherapy. So it's hard to know how any individual is going to respond until they get into treatment. And the second thing to remember is that they really need to talk with their treatment team and be open about any side effects they experience. And as you said, the ability to manage side effects has improved so much over the last few years. People don't have to suffer from them. But of course, the treatment team can't really help unless they know there's a problem. So it's really important to be open. Sometimes folks feel they're worried about telling their treatment team about their side effects because they think it might be mean that they have to go off their treatment, and that's definitely not always the case. So it's important to be open and you know, get some kind of help with the side effects in order to cope.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so let's talk a little bit about clinical trials. When should a patient think about going on to a clinical trial as a part of their treatment plan?
Sure. I think the number one myth about clinical trials, or one of the main myths about clinical trials, is that they are a last resort, and so you only, you know, consider them after you've tried everything else, and that's absolutely not true. We always recommend that people explore clinical trials at any time they have to make a treatment decision, including right after they're diagnosed, before they even start treatment. And it can be really helpful. People can be interested in clinical trials. Their doctors don't always bring them up, and they wonder how to go about talking with a doctor about them. And it can be really helpful for them to know about their options before they discuss the topic with their doctor. And then they together can decide on the best course. And I know that Cancer Support Community and Lung Cancer Alliance both work with a company called Emerging Med to help people find appropriate trials. And it's really easy for them to talk with a lung cancer clinical trial navigator on a toll-free line. It's 800-698-0931. Or obviously they can call the Cancer Support Community support helpline or the Lung Cancer Alliance helpline for more direction. And we can help them understand their clinical trial options and what it really means to join a clinical trial. And obviously we also both have written information on clinical trials that we can offer.
Great. Thank you for that. And we have to take a quick commercial break. This episode of Frankly Speaking About Cancer is sponsored by Boehringer Ingelheim. My name is Linda House, joined by Maureen Rigney from the Lung Cancer Alliance. And please join us right after this break.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Cancer, it's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. This is Linda House. I'm your guest host today, filling in for Kim Thibodeau, who is the president and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. And today we've been talking about lung cancer, from what it is to diagnosis and treatment, with Maureen Rigney, who is the director of community and support services for the Lung Cancer Alliance. And welcome back to our last segment, Maureen. Thank you so much for the information that you've provided us. It's been really helpful. I'm wondering if we could start this particular segment by talking about the healthcare team. And if you're a person with lung cancer, who should you bring in around you? As we have a listener who likes to say patient-led care versus patient-centered care. Who's to provide that patient-led care?
Well, it is important that the team be what's called multidisciplinary, and that means that medical professionals of all different types are involved, and that for lung cancer that might include a lung surgeon, oncologist, one or more types of radiologists, pulmonologist, nurse, social worker, and that the nurse navigator, the nurse, the social worker, those are really important people to have as part of your treatment team. They really know the resources in the area. They can provide support themselves and can really help folks find, understand the disease itself, and then find the support that they need.
Great, thank you. And so what advice would you have for caregivers? So if you have a caregiver of someone with lung cancer, what special considerations come to mind?
Yeah, well, caregivers are so important, and you know, it's that term has a wide range of meanings. It can mean somebody who's right there caring for the person, to someone who's caring long distance, so they're not near, but they're providing invaluable support and information. We get calls from caregivers who want to know the best way to support their loved one with lung cancer, and unfortunately, that's not anything that we can really tell them, because so much depends on the relationship with the person and what they need. And I think one thing caregivers think is that they're supposed to know exactly what to do in every situation, and that's just pretty unlikely, because for most people, this is something they've never encountered before, the going through a lung cancer diagnosis. And so I always encourage caregivers to talk with the person with lung cancer about what they can do and even what they shouldn't do. And that's an important conversation that many people don't think to have. And for a lot of people, trying to keep things as normal as possible is important. I talked with a woman last week who asked if it was okay that she was making her husband laugh, and that they were, if they, you know, said that they were dancing over the weekend, and she thought that might have been kind of silly, but that's what they always did. And I, of course, told her to laugh and to dance and to do as much as possible to not let the diagnosis of lung cancer take over their life. But of course, the most important thing, and the very most important thing that caregivers need to do, is to really take care of themselves. And too often that, you know, feels selfish to them, or they don't feel like there's time for it. But it really is the most important thing they can do for themselves and the person with lung cancer. And we know that caregivers are incredibly strong people, but they need to keep up that strength. And so it's important to think about what is important to them or what will help them rejuvenate. Sometimes it's a yoga class. Sometimes it's just taking a bath. So we recommend whatever respite they can get away from the situation and regain their strength so that they can continue to caregive in the way that they would like. It's only going to make things better.
So Maureen, talk a little bit about resources that are available for the caregiver and also for the person with lung cancer when they are trying to just get information. When they're in that phase of you have cancer, where do they go for information and coping with side effects and costs and all of the elements that come into the cancer journey?
Sure. Well, I honestly don't think you can talk about lung cancer resources without talking about Cancer Support Communities, Frankly Speaking About Lung Cancer booklet. It's amazing. That's in its seventh edition, and we're so grateful to have partnered with you on it from the beginning. And both of our organizations offer a great deal of help to both people with cancer and their caregivers. We each have toll-free helplines to help answer questions or provide guidance, help them understand lung cancer and its treatment options. Cancer Support Community offers telephone counseling, which is a wonderful help. Lung Cancer Alliance keeps a list of lung cancer-specific support groups, and many of the cancer support communities around the country offer them as well, and as well as, you know, just incredible support to people with cancer and their loved ones. And Lung Cancer Alliance also helps find other support in the area, and for a lot of people, that might not be available, and so for people who need additional support or people who don't have access, we offer our Phone Buddy program, and that matches people with lung cancer over the phone for support and information. And we also have something called our Guides program, and that offers the same kind of support, peer-to-peer support, for those whose loved one is the end of life, is at the end of life from lung cancer. And boy, when I think about needs, I know that we get a lot of calls from people who are looking for financial assistance, as I know you do as well. Lung cancer is an expensive disease. Cancer support community offers great information on coping with the cost of cancer care. And we both help people find the resources that are out there to help manage financially, really try to track which foundations have funds for copay assistance and all of that to try to save people having to call around and do that themselves.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. And I would like to just put a little plug in for the work around the cancer insurance checklist. And, you know, there was, as you know, a group of 19 cancer organizations that worked together to put together a checklist so that patients would be able to use that to compare what their needs are relative to availability of healthcare coverage if they are shopping insurance on the marketplaces. Although I would say that it's a tool that could be used for shopping any type of insurance. But what I wanted to just raise here is that if you go to cancerinsurancechecklist.org, there is also a list of resources available to you. And not just on the financial aspect or the healthcare coverage aspect, but for support as well. So I just wanted to quickly take that opportunity to remind people of that resource as well. It's cancerinsurancechecklist.org. So Maureen, talk a little bit about longer-term issues that survivors of lung cancer typically face.
Well, sure. And First of all, I'd like to thank you for asking that question, Linda, because by asking it, you know that there are long-term survivors of lung cancer. We both know them. And one of the problems is that the long-term effects in lung cancer haven't been studied enough, but we certainly know from our volunteers as well as from survivors of other cancers that unfortunately there are issues. There can be long-term side effects from treatment, most notably radiation and chemotherapy. Some people who have had lung cancer surgery may have numbness around their scar for the rest of their lives. So there are definitely some physical responses to being in lung cancer treatment. And of course, there are emotional as well. Like most cancer survivors, there's always the fear of recurrence or a new cancer to contend with. And for many, the way they find helpful to cope is just knowing others are feeling the same way. And survivors can connect through online support communities, support groups, or peer-to-peer support programs to find out they're not alone and not the only people that are feeling that way. And we also see in this cancer with unfortunately such a low survival rate, we do find survivor guilt. And many people who have survived lung cancer find giving back helpful, whether it's through volunteering to be a peer mentor, getting involved with advocacy, volunteering at their local hospital, or even starting a lung cancer support group. That can be really important to them to give back.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. As we close this segment and this show for today, is there anything else that you would like to leave our listeners with? Anything we didn't cover or something you would like to remind them?
Absolutely. We really are in an extraordinary time in lung cancer, and we know that screening saves lives, and much more research is being done. Innovative treatments are being approved faster than ever before. The disease is being caught earlier, and people are living longer. And so I would say to all the people out there with lung cancer and their loved ones, please know that you're not alone. There's an entire community of people here who understand and want to help.
Great words to close on. Thank you so much, Maureen Rigney, for being here with us today to talk about lung cancer and share the work of the Lung Cancer Alliance and a number of our partner organizations. As we've said before, this show has been sponsored by Boehringer Ingelheim. To all of our listeners, thank you for joining us today for Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I am Linda House, filling in today for Kim Thibodeau, so she'll be back with you next week. If you have an idea for an episode of Frankly Speaking About Cancer, we invite all of our listeners to share any topics with us. You can submit your idea to news, N-E-W-S, news at cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community provides a multitude of in-person, online, and over-the-phone support. If you or someone you know is faced with a cancer diagnosis, as Maureen just said, you do not have to do it alone. For more information about our programs, visit us at www.cancersupportcommunity.org, where you can find a location near you or a host of information on our website. You are also more than welcome to call our helpline at 888-793-9355 to speak with a licensed mental health professional Monday through Friday from 9 in the morning to 8 in the evening Eastern Time. Until next time, be well, do well, live well.
Thank you for joining us for Frankly Speaking About Cancer with your host, Kim Tibaldo. We're here for you every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. In the meantime, stay connected online at cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.